Doma Tipongo in the WGN Radio Newsroom. Sam Panionovich watching sports. Griffin Filipich is our producer on Saturdays. This is John Williams. We're here until 12 noon. A lot of ground to cover, and I shouldn't probably mention this now, guys, because we're going to talk about it at length with a guest after 10:30. But I do have in front of me the BBC's list of the 100 greatest comedies of all time. These are movie comedies. And we were trying to figure out what the funniest movies of all time were for us individually or what might be on the list itself, my family and I. And I'm like, oh, gee, I can think of great dramas, great Christmas movies, great horror flicks, you know. But I was really struggling to come up with some great comedies. At this time of national angst and tragedy and Texas and political turmoil everywhere, it's nice to have a list of 100 comedies that you can download or that you can buy online. Most of these movies you can see for free if you have some sort of TV package. It's nice to have a list of movies that will give you a really great escape. Do either of you have a movie that when I say your go-to comedy is, what is it? Okay. For me, it's always been Dr. Strangelove, which is or isn't all that funny for some of you, but is number two on the list. And yet, Griff, you were there when I was trying to recollect it. It took me a while to conjure that one up. Shame on me, right? I should have thought of that right away. Dr. Strangelove is one of my favorite movies. Maybe my problem is I don't think of it as a comedy first and foremost, but I do laugh at that movie. Now, your microphone's not on, Griff. I don't know what the deal is. How about you, Domati, or Sam?
Where's Animal House at?
Yeah, Animal House is on the list. I got 100 of them here. It's not in the top 10. I got bad news for you.
Oh.
But that's okay. Animal House is sure on my list.
Animals House, I'm back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, welcome.
It's in the top 100. It's not. I don't. It's somewhere around 50. There's too many to keep track of. We got to pull it up.
No kidding.
Is Old School on there anywhere?
Which one?
Old School. No, there's a few Will Ferrell movies on here. I don't think Old School cracked the top 100, though. You got Anchorman and Step Brothers in there somewhere.
Anchorman's 33.
Yeah.
Good too.
Dr. Strangelove, I respect more than it made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, that's the problem. I totally get that, Griff. I think there's some movies like that.
But it's been too long since I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching clips of it, and it's just one of my movies that I have some of my favorite scenes, some of my favorite lines. Well, I've been to one World's Fair picnic and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of headphones. Great line from the movie.
You're hearing it as a talk show host, and you're like, I can use that.
That's true.
Thank you, Dr. Strangelove.
I have used that.
It's more very, utilitary than anything
very
else.
Purpose. So, there's no wrong answers to this, but there are some wrong answers to this. I mean, there are some on this list that you just go, really? Isn't that what they're doing again? They come up with a list, and then they try and sound smarter than the room. You will discourage us from that notion here, though, won't you, Griffin? Because was sort of culled from a bunch of critics.
Over 250 critics around the world were polled. They each submitted a top 10. And then out of those lists, they, just mash them all together.
Yeah. We'll get to number one in a little bit. But by the way, Annie Hall, Woody Allen, is number three. The one that surprises me in the top 10, in a way, Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is regarded as the fourth funniest movie comedy of all time. And I'm thinking, I love that movie. I love that movie. I think I laugh out loud at that movie. I'm sure I do. But I think a lot of people don't like or get that movie very much at all. Uh-huh. And I'm surprised to see it on the top 10.
Well, that's the question is, should they pick the funniest movies or the greatest comedy?
Right.
So a movie that fulfills the requirements of the genre of comedy, pick the greatest version of that, or just the thing that makes you laugh the most. The thing that makes you laugh the most is going to be more personal, probably. But when people think of like the greatest movie, their minds probably go to the same things.
Yeah, which explains Dr. Strangelove in a way, doesn't it? I think a lot of us love that movie. No, we weren't cracking up all the time. It's a dark comedy.
Maybe it makes people laugh. But yeah, I mean, it made me laugh sometimes. But
Not
as much as Anchorman. Or a movie that's not on here, probably my favorite comedy, is called White Hot American Summer from 2001. Highly recommend
I really hope Airplane's on there.
Airplane is.
Is it? Woo!
Airplane is number 7.
Airplane kills me. It kills me every single time.
All right, what's your line? What's your takeaway? What's your go-to line from that movie?
Oh, geez. A hospital, what is it? It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Don't call me Shirley.
Shirley?
And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the pilot, and he keeps denying that he's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I'm sorry, the line that is foremost in my mind is, Billy, have you ever seen a grown man naked? Have you ever been to a Turkish prison or whatever it is? That,
Billy, do you like movies about gladiators?
Gladiators, oh my God, in a way, that's so inappropriate. But it's Airplane, and it's the 70s, so they get away with that. Love that movie, too. Laughed out loud at that movie. I'll tell you what, though. So Brenda and I were clicking around last night. We go, all right, well, let's find a funny movie. And we go to, we find Jump Street 22. Now, 21 was pretty good, and we kind of knew 22 would probably be not that good. Wow, is 22 not good? But there is a scene about 45 minutes in it where the police or detective captain, their boss, vandalizes a hotel buffet. He's angry, and he goes up there to get some food, and he just starts smashing food and throwing a turkey around. And it is, we were laughing so loud and so hard that I hit pause, and then we rewound it and played it again on the on demand or whatever I was watching. A very funny scene, not a very funny movie. More of this after 10:30. See, I shouldn't have gone down this road, because we are going to talk about this with our guest. Jason Diamond's going to say hi. His memoir is Searching for John Hughes. He writes a lot about movies, thinks about him more than you or I do. We're going to ask him to kind of plow through the list with us. And we have some great scenes from some of those very, very great movies. August was an amazing month for all of us, and some of these movies are a nice distraction from it. I mean, we had the politics of the last 31 days, unlike the politics that Americans have ever had to digest. Game of Thrones. Very dramatic for many of us, a big part of our lives. There were some amazing sports stories and entertainment stories, to say nothing of Hurricane Harvey. A note about President Trump and where we are on that story right now. He is on his way down there. Domitia, is the president in Houston right now? He said he was going down there today, right?
Yeah, he's heading down there today. As far as I'm seeing, he hasn't made it there just yet, but I'll keep you updated as to when he actually touches land. And he's actually going to go to Lake Charles, Louisiana, I believe it is.
Yeah, that's. I did see that. I'm not exactly sure what his itinerary is, but if it happens before noon, chime in.
Yeah, and the main thing he wants to do is talk to victims this time around rather than just those safety responders and government officials.
Yeah, the White House has said, and it sure did work this way, Mike Pence was very good at connecting with people on a personal level. The president was more the cheerleader, the booster, and the businessman who went to make sure the relief efforts were being managed correctly. Now, that may have been spin. Maybe the president dropped the ball and not touching people more, showing more empathy. But he's going to give that a try again today. And let's hope that, whatever good any president's visit to storm-ravaged people can do, he is able to do it. President Trump tweeted this week that Texas was healing fast at a time when many Texans said they certainly were not. And it didn't help that he misspelled the word heal in that original tweet. And it also didn't help that when he himself pledged $1 million in aid, it was not clear to his spokesperson or anyone if that was going to be foundation money or personal funds. Associated Press today indicates that it will come from his personal funds. It also didn't help that 3 hours after CNN covered that story of his donation, the president's son, Eric, said that CNN surely would not cover it, but they already had. A sidebar news story is now going to be when and how much money actually gets donated. Now, many of us are victims of being spontaneously generous with our pledges and then slow to write the checks. Did you ever call into the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon? Labor Day weekend is here. And a staple in American life used to be Jerry Lewis's big annual Labor Day telethon. And we'd call in and say, yeah, I'll give $10. How many of us wrote the check every single time? But if you're the president, and if a public accounting of your philanthropy comes to $8.2 million in pledges, but $2.5 million in actual donations, then you better believe the Washington Post is going to make it its business that if you don't write that check soon, we're all going to hear about it. The president is asking for suggestions as to whom he should give his $1 million to. and various charities are interviewing for his donation. So far, the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, and the Chicago White Sox have asked for his help. Just kidding about the White Sox. One last note about the president's tweet. He's misspelled the word heal before. A lot of us have a word or phrase that we just can't get right. A member of my family continues to use then when they actually mean than. I don't think it's a typo. I think they actually haven't gotten their head around the different meanings of the two words. And I can only get the use of I and me right if I slow down or actually stop and think about the correct grammar of I and me. And all of us have our spelling weak spots. That's weak spelled W-E-A-K. Generally, I've been more touched by the acts of kindness and heroism this week. The mattress furniture store owner in Houston who let the victims just come and live in his showroom. So there you see people, you know, sitting on the sofas that they're going to try and sell, or maybe not, is sleeping in the beds that somebody else presumably would have bought. And yet it now looks like a shelter. It's a furniture store. In a way, a furniture store is a perfect place to house people because it's got housing, but now you can't sell it as new. What an amazing donation by that guy. NFL players and celebrities are challenging each other to match their million-dollar donations. Did you see the picture of that rancher who was going out to check on his cattle, most of whom he feared had drowned? And he posted a picture of what looks like a stormy Atlantic. It's where a highway is heading out of town. Maybe you saw the picture of the man sitting up to his waist at a piano. He and his family had to leave their house because it was flooded. His one son loves the piano and plays it frequently. The children and his wife were all staying somewhere else, and he went back to the house to gather some toys and effects. And so there he is sitting at the piano with the water almost up to the keyboard. Imagine that. So to your waist, you're sitting on a bench that's underwater. And the piano still works. In fact, Griffin, I have that audio there. I don't know if you can play it. And I'm not sure if you know which track that is. But if you can play it, play it. And CNN has the story of this guy.
It is the avowed policy.
Nope, not that one. Certainly not that one. This is it. And so he's sitting there in this empty house with about 3 feet of water, and he's just checking on their piano, which is surely ruined or going to be. And a pianist and singer named Vanessa Carlton said, well, we have to get this guy and his family a new piano. Yamaha is her sponsor. She called them and they said a piano is on the way. He doesn't know that. He's probably heard it since, but there he is just playing in a water-filled home a goodbye to the family's instrument. It's 10:22. This is just a sidebar, but let's do this for just a second. I'll take a break. Back to the word heal for a second. Is there a word or phrase that you have that's your stumbling point? Sam, you must have many because you're in sports.
Thank you.
Look up cheap shot.
Yeah.
But is there a word or phrase that you go, I know I always get it wrong? And knowing it doesn't help. Like you think if you knew if the word, you know, either is spelled I-E or E-I. Once you learned that you always got it wrong, you'd always get it right. But some of us then cannot remember the right way to spell a word or say a phrase. I and me or me and I or, you know, I'm not sure what it is. But I know we all have those weak spots. We can all relate to the inability to say or spell something correctly. And people go, oh, my God, how can you not know that? What is that for you? Now, Sam, you don't seem to have one, evidently.
Years I kept saying cavalcade, even though it's cavalcade, like a group of something.
I said
that wrong for like 3 years and nobody ever told me. So I'm listening back to old tapes and finally, like an offensive line on a screenplay, right?
Right.
For a running back. There's a cavalcade of lineman. And then somebody was like, you know that that's not a word. And I said, what do you mean it's not a word?
Wait a minute, cavalcade's not a word?
Cavalcade is a word. I was saying calvicade. I was flipping the L and the V somehow.
Yeah, yeah, been there, done. We've all got those words.
It was a great, it was like an 80-yard touchdown run, though. But I'm the idiot because I get the word wrong.
312-981-7200. Give me your example, please. We can all relate on WGN. 1028, I've gone long. Let's just, Rosalind, throw you in the mix for a second. I'm going to pause for the news so that we have more time for our guests. But, Rosalind, jump in there. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi. I have two words.
Okay.
When I'm writing, I have to be really careful about say and saw. And when I'm writing or speaking, I can't get my tenses straight on was and were.
Was and were. So I was at the store. Well, because were is a funny word, because sometimes were is the appropriate one to use.
I know. And say and saw, I might write say when I meant saw.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. And you know, you sound like a bright lady, and I'm a bright guy, and the president's graduated from a fine school. So all of us just sort of have these weak spots, and I don't think it says anything about our intelligence. We just all seem to have them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think I've had it since grade school. It's just certain words you can't get together for some reason. I don't know. When I was little, I couldn't remember the, but I got that pretty good now.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of my big words in high school was there, and I used to spell it T-H-I-E-R, and my English teacher said, just think of the word the, you can spell that. And then you know you've got two other letters, tack on the I and R then. If you can just get the, then IR follows. I go, okay. And I haven't misspelled there since. Now the problem for us, and I see this on the internet all the time, is people don't know how to use T-H-E-I-R versus T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E versus T-H-E-R-E.
R-E, yeah.
And I try not to be a snob.
I
do too. I'm pretty proud of myself on that.
Yeah, yeah, but give me saying saw. I might say I might write. I saw something, and I might write. I say something. I saw the picture, and I might write. I say the picture.
You stay well, Rosalind.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Have a good day. Drive safely. It's 10:30. Domitee's got the news. That's next.
There's an old joke. Two elderly women are at a Catskill Mountain resort, and one of them says, boy, the food at this place is really terrible. The other one says, yeah, I know, and such small portions. Well, that's essentially how I feel about life, full of loneliness and misery and suffering and unhappiness, and it's all over much too quickly.
Woody Allen from Annie Hall at 10:39 on WGN. This is John Williams. A half hour from now, we'll go from comedy to politics and really local politics. We'll talk about a couple of very interesting stories in Chicago and Illinois with the Mincing Rascals Roundtable podcast broadcast. The gang will be on in a half an hour. But for this half hour, we wanted to go to that list that was compiled by the BBC. The BBC asked 253 film critics, 118 women, 135 men from 52 countries and six continents, a simple question: what do you think are the 10 best comedies of all time? So this is a studied list, and they have the 100. And I want to just kind of walk through them. This will give you some suggestions of what to watch this weekend or this year. I think comedies are fun to watch. This year, I actually think they'll serve a purpose as well. So, Griffin, you'll need to chime in. And we invited Jason Diamond back to the show. Jason, it's John Williams, and you're on GN Radio. How are you, Jason? Stand by, Jason. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Really good. Last we had you on, you were talking to us about your memoir, Searching for John Hughes, which makes you somebody who not only has an amazing personal story to tell and told it very well, but you know a little bit about movies and funny movies as well. Fair enough?
Yeah, those are things I know. I'm a pretty big fan of funny and funny movies. Yeah, those are two of my top favorite things, I think.
Well, this is one way to do this, you guys. Let me just, you know, I'm not going to read all 100, but let me just stop on some that I have highlighted from 100 to 1. If you guys have something to chime in or say about it, let's hear your micro analysis, your gut check. Fair enough? So 100 is the king of comedy. 100 is the ladies' man, a Jerry Lewis movie. Those are the two that tie for 100. 99, The Jerk, Carl Reiner, 1979. Should it be on the list? Is that about the right place for it? What do you say, Jason?
I think The Jerk is one of the funniest movies of all time. It's probably in my top five, actually. So I was kind of shocked to see it that high. It's basically like the everything to like, up to like 30 Rock to this day, like shows that like have a joke per, I don't know, a few seconds.
Yeah.
The Jerk basically kind of helped make that a thing.
Yeah, you know, that's why I highlighted it, because I remember that movie so fondly. I remember laughing out loud. I thought, boy, I would have put that, I don't know, higher than 99, lower, if you will. Griff, have you seen The Jerk yet?
Yeah.
So we know how Griff feels that it's in the right place. 99 is about right.
Well, and a lot of stand-up comedians don't transfer well onto the big screen. So for this stage in Steve Martin's career to see him like actually make a great movie out of what was an amazing stand-up persona at the time, that's nice, because a lot of great comedians don't make great movies.
Fair enough. Ask Eddie Murphy. Well, you know, Eddie's had a couple good movies, but he's also made some
terrible movies.
He's
got some
on
this list, but yeah, he did... He's had some trouble, too.
Well, that's the problem with this list, too, Jason. We were talking about it earlier. The greatest comedies, does that mean the funniest, or a movie that just happens to fall into, like Pulp Fiction, the comedy genre? Maybe isn't super funny, but Lord, that's a great movie. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I'm looking at this, and I mean, in my mind, you would imagine comedy, Charlie Chaplin would be in the top five, at least. I mean, I feel like that's... everything came after him, or Buster Keaton. So that would, in my mind, make it a little bit more, I guess, lower, higher in the rankings. But apparently, I mean, Groundhog Day is one of my favorite films of all time, and it is hilarious. But enough critics thought that that was, I guess, a more important or a funnier comedy. I'm not sure, but
I was surprised to see Groundhog Day.
Confused me about the list.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that at number four. All right, so The Jerk is 99. The Hangover is number 98. Do you like that one there, The Hangover?
Yeah, I guess. You know what? I laughed when I saw it. I can't really say it's... I don't think it's better than The Jerk. I definitely don't think it's better than The King of Comedy. So I don't... You know, that's what I guess kind of frustrates me about these lists. And I guess that's the whole point of them. But, you know, you find yourself looking at like 99 and 100 and being like, why is this here and these aren't there? It's... but I don't know. I guess it belongs on the list for sure.
Ghostbusters at 95. I got such a warm spot for Ghostbusters. Now I'm trying to remember how funny it was. I thought it was pretty funny. I thought it was really well made. God, that was a hit when it came out. Ghostbusters is 95. Zoolander, you guys, is 88. Zoolander's a great movie. That thing is very funny. I'm sorry, Zoolander deserves better than 88.
there's a lot of movies out there. I think it's an honor to be nominated. If you're in the 100, that you're in good shape.
I guess so.
Just we hope for the representation. For instance, did you mention already? I have a hard time finding a John Hughes movie on here.
Yeah, there's your boy John Hughes. Jason, is there a John Hughes movie on this list? I don't see one.
Not a single one. Not one that he wrote. Not one that he directed.
What's that all about?
I couldn't even see. I didn't see a National Lampoon film on there that he did. I didn't see Breakfast Club. So I was shocked.
You can look at the individual ballots, and I saw him pop up a lot more on those. But maybe it's because he made so many that none got like consensus picked. But I don't know.
Woody Allen's on there a lot. I mean, so what would your movie be, Griffin? The John Hughes movie that would be in the top 100 comedies of all time?
I guess that's tough.
Pick one.
I would go with Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
How is
Ferris Bueller's Day Off not on this list? I can't respect a list that doesn't have Ferris on there. Zoolander belongs on there. How about Waiting for Guffman at 84? Isn't that just fun to recollect some of these? 81, There's Something About Mary. I want to say something about There's Something About Mary at 81. I'm not sure where it should be on the list, but I remember being in the audience, and this was 19... There's Something About Mary was 1998, so 20 years ago, say. So I'm 37 at the time. I was shocked and offended by this movie. And I don't think I've ever been in an audience of people that was laughing so hard. People were just screaming they were laughing so hard at There's Something About Mary. Is that your recollection of it, guys? Do you remember that movie as being shockingly offensive but also shockingly funny? Do you remember it that way?
I mean, I was the probably the target audience because I was about 17 or 18 at the time when it came out, and I remember we were dying. I mean, we were like, this is the greatest movie we've ever seen in the theater. Yeah. You know, you walk away from it thinking, wow, that was the most hilarious thing.
I didn't know you could say, show, or do those things in a movie. They were. I mean, it was as a comedy. Wow.
Oh, sorry. Jason.
Oh, no, I was going to say, even as a Bears fan, seeing Brett Favre show up in it, I was like, oh, my God, the great reveal.
What were you about to say, Griff?
Well, some movies like that the communal experience is so important. I remember Borat was kind of that way, too. I don't know how it would age if I watched it now, but I remember watching it in the theater, and people were freaking out. They were laughing.
So. Borat is on this list and is pretty high at 41. Mm. And you got to skip ahead.
We're only in the 80s.
Okay, so there's something about Office Space is 80. The Nutty Professor, 1963. Jerry Lewis is 73. Fond spot for that one. Caddyshack is 65. Caddyshack is too important an American film to be as low as 65. Should it at least be in the top 50?
That's insane.
Let's have this conversation where we don't make fun of people's opinions, okay? Griffin, go.
Well, your opinion is just uniformly they should all be number one. How is that not number one?
That's the problem with some of these lists.
I am doing that. Broadcast News is 56. Wow, what a great movie. I'm sorry. I love that movie. I'm happy for it at 56. Do we all remember that movie very, very fondly? What's the standout scene, line, or memory from Broadcast News for you, Jason?
The part where Albert Brooks is sweating.
Yes, yes.
I have been that guy.
Haven't we all? Best in Show is 55. That would be in my top five. Give me your reaction to Best in Show.
I mean, I think it's... Personally, I like it more than Spinal Tap. I like it more than Guffman. I think they portray the perfect Lake Forest couple, with Parker Posey and her husband.
Yes.
Michael Hitchcock.
It's amazing.
Who is an alma mater of Lyons Township High School, where I went.
Oh, no kidding. Yep. Really?
Yes, our most notable, probably.
No, David Hasselhoff is.
Yeah, but...
David Hasselhoff is.
We're most proud of Michael Hitchcock.
At Griffin's High School, they have a Wall of Fame, and they have bronze plaques of all of the famous people who have graduated from there, astronauts, scientists, movie stars, whatever. And the students will touch some of them, and as they do over the years, they've worn them down. Only one plaque has had to be replaced in the history of the school. You want to guess who it is, Griff? It's the Hoff.
Yeah.
Don't hassle the Hoff.
That was mostly my doing. Wow. I was just constantly rubbing his face.
Okay, so the bottom 50 and some great sound from them in a minute on GN.
What's the matter now?
How do they walk in these things, huh? How do they keep their balance?
It must be the way the weight is distributed. Now, come on.
It is so drafty. They must be catching cold all the time, huh?
Will you quit stalling? We're going to miss the train.
I feel naked. I feel like everybody's staring at me.
With those legs, are you crazy? Now, come on.
Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis from Some Like It Hop. We've been going through the BBC's list of the top 100 comedies of all time. And the final five are 5, Duck Soup, 4, Groundhog Day, 3, Annie Hall, 2, Dr. Strangelove, and 1, that movie, Some Like It Hot. I made my list of my top 5 of all time. We asked Jason Diamond to give us his too. Jason, do you have your top 5 comedies in no particular order? Hold on, Jason. I guess we have to put him on the air. Okay, Jason, now you're on. Top 5.
I guess some of this is because of nostalgia, because they're movies I grew up watching, but I'm definitely going to go with Young Frankenstein. Mel Brooks, you know, I grew up on Mel Brooks, so I can't not put a Mel Brooks film in there, and that's the best one. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, obviously. I'm going to put Ghostbusters because it's the first movie I ever saw in a theater, and I still watch it every year. The Jerk, like we mentioned. And I'm going to say I'm shocked that Manhattan isn't on the list.
Not.
And I think that's the best of Woody Allen's movies. It's my favorite. So
Ferris Bueller's on my list of the top five comedies of all time. My list is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Best in Show, Diner, Annie Hall, Raising Arizona, and Dr. Strangelove. Yes, my list of five does have six. Griffin, do you have five favorite comedies all time?
I think I'm up to four now.
Okay, well, just that's good because I did six.
Well,
so what have you got?
I said Wet Hot American Summer, Best in Show, and Wayne's World. This might be stretching it. It's more of a concert movie, but my favorite movie is Dave Chappelle's Block Party. That's debatable, but everybody go out and watch that.
Well, if Pulp Fiction gets to be in comedy, then I guess
I think you can count it, right?
The Dave Chappelle movie can.
And then the
Mel
Brooks thing also. I would be lying if I said I watched so many of those as a kid, but not the classics. So probably Spaceballs or Robin Hood Men in Tights. I mean, if I'm just being real with what I've watched and laughed at the most, it has been a while for
Well, you know,
those,
a movie that we were all watching, Jason, the other day was Singing in the Rain and laughing at that.
So good.
That movie is fun on so many different levels, and that is 35 on the Film Critics list of the greatest comedies of all time. Clueless is 34, Anchorman 33, Raising Arizona is 32. By the way, Raising Arizona is number 7 in my top 5 list of all time.
Oh, you know, my 5 is Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski is number 11 on the list, by the way. They've got Blazing Saddles at 20, Big Lebowski at 11, This is Spinal Tap is 9, Airplane is 7, and then Duck Soup, etc.
So I love the way you skip all the ones you've deemed pretentious.
Where's My Cousin Vinny at?
No My Cousin Vinny.
What?
But just keep in mind, anything before 1950.
What's a ute?
Anything before 1950 is getting skipped over in your retelling of this list.
I am not giving old farty movies that people don't really like or
The
laugh
General
at.
At number 10.
Didn't make my even mention here, but what is The General at number 10?
It's a Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton, 1926.
Jason, comedians. You agree on My Cousin Vinny, right?
Oh, it's got to be on there. I'm shocked it's not on there. I'm also, you know what? I didn't even think about Diner until one of you guys mentioned it, and I'm shocked that's not on here either.
That's my top 10 of all time, so I'm putting it in my top 5, which now has 8 comedies of all time. But that's the way these things go.
And how could you have it down at number 8? That's crazy. How could you only have Diner at 8? Come on.
Jason, people need to read your memoir, Searching for John Hughes. Is it number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list now?
It should be. We can argue about it.
Yeah. We'll have you on next week to argue whose memoirs are the greatest of all time, and I'm going to put yours in the top 3 of all time, and I don't even know what the other 2 are, okay?
I appreciate that.
Stay well, and when you come to Chicago, swing through our studios, okay?
All right, I'll see you guys soon.
He writes about Chicago movies, John Hughes is his filter for his life. It's an amazing story, Jason Diamond. Okay, we'll do the news. Domati's got that for you. The Mincing Rascals are excellent this week. That's coming up, too, on WGN. Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams. Yeah, mid-60s throughout Chicagoland, but maybe 90 degrees. Tom Skilling said one of the top 10 warmest Labor Days ever on
That's
Monday.
That's a good Skilling.
Well, I'll tell you. Okay, so The Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record here at WGN Radio. Do listen to it at WGNRadio.com or subscribe to it, download it wherever you get your finer podcasts. It's called The Mincing Rascals. It always includes Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio and Eric Zorn, the columnist from The Tribune. And as often as they can join us, Kristen McQuarrie, who's in the mix this week from the Chicago Tribune, an editorial writer, and Scott Stantis, their editorial cartoonist. So a couple of us radio guys and 2 or 3 of those newspaper guys. This week we talk about the limit for price surging in Chicago. You'll never get stuck with a high Uber bill again. But we begin with Eric Zorn's column in the Chicago Tribune, who said this week, without committee hearings, expert testimony, with almost no public debate and precious little debate in the General Assembly, Illinois is about to join the ranks of states that funnel significant amounts of public money into K-12 private schools, many of them religious. That budget bill they got passed in the school funding bill means as much as $100 million will now go to private schools in Illinois. And Eric Zorn said, I'm against the idea.
This was a major change in the way we fund schools. And it's $100 million a year that will be available and almost certainly will be donated to, and 75 million of that will be tax money.
To scholarships
for kids to go to private schools.
So what's so bad about that? I mean, Kristen, where are you on this? Is it good that at least kids will have an option rather than going to the, as I understand it, public schools? Now they've got money to go to a better private school.
Yes. I mean, this is for low and middle income families to have what probably every single one of us around this table has. It's not public money. It is money that is donated and encouraged to be donated through a tax credit, just like you donate to Catholic Charities or Goodwill or whatever, and the state gives you a tax credit.
But public money's diminished by that gift.
It is money lost to state coffers.
Revenue,
yeah. That
is
true.
Money that would be going. You subtract that money, 75 cents on the dollar, from your state tax bill. It's much more generous than a donation.
It is much more generous than a donation, and it needs to be in order to meet the demand. You watch, kids are going to be lining up for this program. Families are going to be lining up for this program. And I'm not there is an income cutoff for if you
it's
make
like $79,000,
73
right?
For a family of four.
I was a little surprised how high that was.
I don't think so. I think it's targeting low and middle income families who are trapped in schools where, you know, boundaries keep you to a school district and people don't have the resources to pick up and move to the suburbs and live in a really, you know, high performing school district.
How does it work? Because they're calling it scholarships. So are these parents of children donating money to quote-unquote scholarships that will pay for their kids' education? Or
no.
can I contribute to that and write it off?
You could donate. And there are programs like this that already exist. They just aren't at the scale that they need to be. I interviewed a woman the other day who runs a program called Link. It's been around for 50 years. She is able to serve about 60 low-income African-American students, high-performing students who are stuck in, you know, poor-performing schools. This will allow her to reach more kids. And the people who donate to her program, some of them are, those awful, awful, wealthy, rich guys who want to make a difference and help. They mentor the kids over the 4 years. They develop relationships with them. Talk to some of the kids who have been saved by being able to get out of a chronically underperforming school.
But what does it leave in the public schools then?
It leaves in the public schools what are in the public schools now. I mean, I'm sorry, but if you think that we can save...
How does this help the Chicago public schools?
It creates competition. It will make some of those schools have to step up their game. It has happened in other parts of the country where these have
I'm
existed.
Not arguing with you. I think
I'm
Eric
losing
is.
My equanimity about this. I mean, what's happening is that when you take money away from... If you're doing per pupil funding and you lose like 3 or 4 or 5 kids from every school, that doesn't reduce most of the cost that the school has, you know, in terms of utilities and staffing and building costs and all stuff like that. So if you got this money going from the schools and you're transferring it over to private education, ultimately I think the effect is going to be bad on public schools. I could be wrong. I mean, we can see what will happen, but I really believe this is going to be bad for public education. It's going to further segment our society. And, yeah, you can say we want poor kids to have the same choice that we all have. I would like to have poor kids have the same choices in health care that we all have.
Okay, let's not go down that tangent. No. And, by the way, this is not public education dollars. This is money that would be lost to the general revenue fund. The legislature every year can continue to fund public schools at the level that they are currently funded and more under the new formula.
So where's the money going to go?
This is money that is lost to the general revenue fund. So what's not going to be funded? They just passed a huge tax increase.
But they're billions of dollars in debt already.
Well, exactly. So I'm glad to hear that you're so worried about programs being unfunded.
Scott, did you see this coming? I didn't even know that this was on the table. All the debates about, maybe I'm not reading it enough, but I didn't know that the linchpin, is it linchpin or lynchpin?
Lynchpin.
The lynchpin on this was going to be...
No, this was a surprise. I didn't know. When did this come up in the debate?
It was not in the mix of the education funding debate, as far as I can tell.
Well, clearly, it sounds like it was a payoff for Republican votes.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think...
It was purposefully kept under wraps because it is so explosive. And just like when Mike Madigan and the House laudably passed Tier 2 pension reform in 2013 and also sprung that bill up on the House floor at the last minute, the longer you leave proposals like this out that organized labor hates, the less of a chance you have of passing them. So, yes, sometimes big issues get
Do you endorse
pushed into
that?
The, I don't endorse it, but I also understand why sometimes it has to happen this way.
So what you have is a lower middle class family, and they're sending their kids to a parochial school, a Catholic school in Chicago, right? So they're writing a tuition check to that school. Do they get the credit there, or does the school have to set up a quote-unquote scholarship fund and then they get the money that way? What's the mechanism for it?
They're not getting the money unless they are connected with one of these nonprofit organizations that screens families and work. The state will choose scholarship authorizers.
So it doesn't really help the lower income parent who's sending the kid to the
Except
school.
Except that their kid will get a scholarship.
Some of their kids.
Some
of the kids in these
the
programs.
Scholarship and the money will go to the students.
Okay.
The donor.
It's not a guarantee.
The way I understood it was everyone who was sending a kid would get that tax credit.
It's not a deduction for their parents.
No. Donors. It's not a deduction for the parents. It's a deduction for the donor.
You know, what you have in here is something that I think was rushed through. We didn't have hearings on it. We didn't have debate on it, really. And Kristen's right. There are things that have to be done quickly like that or that are done quickly.
I hate sausage gravy.
You hate it. I mean, it's what they were trying to do with health care, though. You think about that on the federal level. They were trying, well, hey, we're just going to do this and vote on it and find out what's in it later.
Why do you care so much about, I'm using air quotes here, public education? There are schools in the city that have failed to, where you have 25% of kids dropping out. You have one-third of kids who are parents by the time they graduate. You've had a huge exodus of middle-class black families from the South and West sides, particularly the South side. I'm done. You're not going to turn around some of these schools. You're just not. But you can save some of the kids who are in them. Why do you care so much about the system and the bureaucracy and the school instead of those families and the kids? Those are the kids you're going to save. You're like, what about the kids who are left behind? Let's get them more scholarship programs. Let's get them to schools that have a track record of working.
Speaking of taking and leaving, some aldermen want to limit the amount Uber can surge its prices to 150% of the previous 7 days average. So a $10 ride will now not be they cannot charge more than $25. By my math, that's 150% of 10 bucks. So thank you, Chicago, for sticking up for the average citizen. Or, hey, Chicago, it's a private business. It's not yours to tell them what they can charge.
Why would you punish two companies who are living up to their agreement with the city? That's what's happening here, right? Uber and Lyft came in. They had a ride-sharing agreement with the city. They're living up to it. And now, because North Side pampered people like John Williams might have had to pay extra to get to work.
$12 ride was 120 bucks one day.
From where to where?
From Wrigley to downtown.
That's when the red line went down because someone jumped in. So,
did you have to pay that?
I had to not pay that. I'm not paying that, but that was what it was.
Okay,
because the red line was backed up. The Lakeshore Drive was a mess. People have to get around, and so you say, "Well, I'll take an Uber or Lyft." It's $120.
But that's what the market was. This is what makes me crazy. I mean, we have Ed Burke, who's the head of the finance committee in the city council, come out and say that to try to pass legislation to outlaw or at least severely curtail the ability of driverless cars. This is a technology that doesn't even exist yet. Think about this for a moment. The largest company that has the largest fleet of cars doesn't own a single automobile. The company that has the biggest renter of hotel rooms doesn't own a single room. That's the new economy. This is how it works. Things were screwed up. There was immense demand for an Uber. That's how much it costs.
John, if I might join my friends on the right for this. It just seems like...
Come on over.
Come to Don't go, Steve. Don't go.
Steve, you are my
You're
son.
You're the one that abstained in the
Water's
last
cold.
Voting around the table.
I know. It was my transgression.
Show your real cards.
There's this idea that these people offer service, so now you're entitled to it. That you're entitled to dictate the demands to which they provide the service to you. I mean, if there was a shortage in ice cream and, you know, you wouldn't demand that Baskin Robbins bring ice cream to your house. That's a terrible analogy. But there still were a ways to get to work. And before Uber, people would have relied on taxi cabs. Did anyone call a cab? I mean,
the city regulates.
They wouldn't have been able to get a cab.
Well, the city regulates cab rates.
For the Uber example, I think I'm with my friends on the right. Although when I think about what's going on down in Houston, where they're charging, you know, they're multiplying greatly the
$90 for a case
of bottled water.
That's gouging.
Seems like at some point when you're really exploiting a tragedy. Having the red line closed is not a tragedy if you're going to be late to work. So it's like if you want to get to work, you got to pay.
No, wait a minute. You have water to survive, and you have Steve Bertrand's ice cream. And these are different ends of the spectrum.
I'd like to melt the whole ice cream thing. That was a bad idea.
Well, I think it's fair because I don't think you're actually endorsing that. But we all agree the gouging for water is wrong. So where is public transportation on the continuum?
I don't know that Stannis agrees that gouging for water is wrong.
Oh, it is wrong. There's the difference.
Where is public transportation? Is it more towards
something that we is vital and we should all protect, or is it just a luxury and you can find another way to get to work?
It's a luxury and you can find another way to get to work.
Luxury is a loaded word.
It's non-necessity. Think of it, John. Uber didn't exist 10 years ago. The CTA red line power failures did, right? So what happened 10 years ago when there was a derailment on the CTA and people couldn't get... Was there a government program forcing private citizens to pick up their neighbors and bring them downtown?
So you
got by with what was there.
Okay.
I think we need to start a GoFundMe page for John Williams for a bike.
Do you own a bicycle,
so
John?
So that you can hop on your bicycle and make your way downtown.
Speaking of public funding.
Yeah, well, that's not such a bad idea. GoFundMe page, or at least I need to start riding a bicycle, particularly since I discovered that if you do divvy wrong, that can be very expensive. Were you around, Griffin, when I was telling my story about what happened when my niece, Lauren, and I took the divvy?
I don't think so.
So we took the divvy up and down for a day, 2 hours and 1 minute up and down Lakeshore Drive, $70.
For two?
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
That is news to me. I did not know that's what 2 hours and a minute would cost in a divvy.
So you're in the three-hour bracket at that point. Is that what it was?
Two and a half. Yeah, you cross the threshold. And every half hour, it gets more and more expensive. You know,
2 hours is a long time to be on a divvy.
Well, I guess I didn't realize
it's
a commuter thing. I thought it was, hey, let's go ride some bikes for the day. Particularly since...
Do you remember what city you were in?
Really, I thought I was in John Land. All the divvy stands say, like, you know, $9.89, whatever it is, a day. It's $9 and something a day. So I thought, oh, a day. Then they have all those half-hour rates posted next to it. And I thought, well, no, I'm not taking it for a half hour. I'm taking it for the day. I did not know that they added the half hours onto the day rate.
Yeah, in your defense, it's basically an outright lie posted.
Thank you, Griffin. I appreciate you seeing it my way. So thank you also to Kristen McQuarrie. She's the last voice there in the Mincing Rascals. Eric Zorn, the columnist from the Chicago Tribune. Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for said newspaper, and our very own Steve Bertrand. The entirety of that podcast, plus our recommendations, which I think are fun, helpful to you at the end, can all be heard on the WGN Radio website. Go to WGNRadio.com. You'll see the link there. Or just subscribe to and download regularly the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's 11:23. You may have something to say about what you just heard. The number's 312-981-7200. We'll open up a phone line or two and maybe read some of your texts if you text to that number. But also, Sam Panionovich wants to predict the outcome of at least one college football game. We're going to pause here, but Sam, you've got a game ready for us to bet on.
I do. We have to get ready for NFL season. We'll call it the practice round.
Stand by. By the way, Domitia, I understand the Trumps have landed in Texas, right?
Yes, the president and the first lady have just landed in Texas. And the first lady dressed, I normally don't comment on what the first lady's wearing, but it was so much conversation where she had on stilettos during the first time they visited. This time dressed noticeably more casual. Has on a hat and some khaki pants and a denim shirt. And this time around, you get the feeling they're trying to look more sympathetic and empathetic with the victims. They'll visit with the victims more closely this time around. The first time they only spoke with state emergency officials.
And they were not in Houston last time because they said they didn't want to get in the way of the relief efforts. Also, the first time the famous stiletto heels got onto Marine One, of course, when she actually got on the ground, she stepped off of Air Force One in white sneakers. But you know people are going to be watching their every step, their every hug, their every fashion moment. And I was kind of wondering about that myself.
Absolutely. Just one quick note here, too. People were quick to criticize the president because when he didn't first go visit the victims of the places hit the worst. But that can pull resources when the president visits places like this, pulls resources from local municipalities. They have to do security runs. They have to get law enforcement to escort the president. A lot of things happen logistically that could kind of dampen relief efforts. So just bear that in mind, too.
My recollection, too, though, is that when President Clinton or Bush or Reagan or Obama would visit a disaster site, they would make a visit, and that would be that moment.
Yes.
It's unusual that a president would 2 days later turn around and go essentially to the same place. Now, the president is famous for his handshakes and his embraces. They are events unto themselves. So once again, I think attention fairly and unfairly is going to be put on how the president literally comports himself, to say nothing of what the first lady wears. You mentioned she had a hat on. There was criticism last time about the USA hat, which he was wearing, both of them were wearing, even when indoors on a teleconference, which was not public. But they were always wearing the hats whenever they were photographed. Those hats are campaign merchandise items that you can get for $40. And plenty of people took umbrage with the fact that they were merchandising in the midst of a tragedy. All of these things under the microscope today. It's 11:30. Okay, so Sam, here's what we're going to do. Domitee's news. Before we get to the Vibe Score segment, you and I need to break down at least one college game to kind of get in the groove for what could be a $1 million win for you this year. Is that right?
I've got a winner. I'm ready.
Give me the game that you're going to pick.
Michigan, Florida.
Okay, but that's an interesting game. And it's not just the outcome, but the spread and how you play that. Am I correct on that?
Correct. And I'll tease you this way. Florida did have 10 players suspended. So we'll
really?
See where I go with this.
Good Lord. Okay, it's 11:38. Okay, so Sam Panayotovich does sports with us here, of course, on Saturdays. We very much appreciate that. He's been invited to and will be joining us on my Monday show to sort of recap some of the football games and big scores. We've got baseball playoffs coming up. We've got the NBA season, of course, down the corner with college basketball. But the NFL and college football start this week. So you're going to come on our show Monday and do the recap of the things that essentially you're setting up for us on Saturdays. And I appreciate that, Sam. But it's also going to be fun because you've been asked to participate in a betting pool in Las Vegas.
The Westgate Super Contest.
It's 600 people trying to pick 5 games that they're most confident in each week.
Actually, I've learned that it's now over 1,000 people that are in the contest. They've added so many in the last 2 weeks.
Wah, wah. And, well, does that change the fact that the pool was $1 million? Is it still $1 million prize?
Grand prize still $1 million, but the secondary prizes are a lot bigger now.
Got it. Okay. So somebody's fronting you on this. But so this is you're playing for real here.
Yep. Team Oddshark put us up. Team Panayotovich-Williams. And we will start next Saturday. We'll have to pick our first 5 games. 5 games in the NFL in the regular season for 17 straight weeks against the spread.
And you don't have to pick all the games. And they don't tell you the games. Pick the games you're most comfortable with. But, I mean, so you know a great team's going to beat a lousy team. But then by how much? That's the spread, and
right,
you have
to
be on the right side of that.
Right, if the Patriots play the Browns, the spread could be 20.
So then the question is, do you like 20 or not? That's how these are maybe more difficult than it would sound at first blush. So you got to pick 5 games you're really comfortable with. Okay, so for instance, we don't have no regular season NFL. Does it start Thursday of this week, the NFL season?
Yeah, it does start Thursday, and the lines are up. For example, the Falcons are playing in Chicago against the Bears. Atlanta's favored by 7 points.
So are you going to pick that one?
I believe I will.
And who are you going to take on that one?
... Have to wait and see.
Okay. Okay, well, all right, give me one that you would put money on this week.
Well, in the NFL, I'd probably look at I really like the Arizona Cardinals this year. The game is in Detroit. Detroit was favored by 2. Now it's a pick 'em, meaning just pick the winner. Usually when you have a team laying less than a field goal at home, that's not a good sign for them. And Matthew Stafford, fat and happy, just got paid. Richest man in NFL history. I think he's satisfied, and I like this Cardinals team to bounce back. So I like Arizona in week 1.
How would you pick a college game this week?
All right, interesting. I'm a chandelier guy. You know what that means?
Nope.
The chandeliers in Vegas were not put up by the people that own the casinos. They were bought by people that lost money, correct? So,
yeah.
Florida, Michigan.
Yeah.
Florida had 10 players suspended. And when you read the headline on that, you think, oh, my God, well, how can they possibly compete? Michigan has 9 new starters on defense. They only have 4 returning starters in total. And the line movement, despite all the money being on Michigan, everybody in Vegas is walking up. 84% of the tickets in Vegas are on Michigan. The line has barely budged. It has barely moved, despite all the money being on Michigan and the 10 players for Florida suspended. It's too easy to take Michigan. I am a chandelier guy. I am a contrarian. I like Florida to hang in there, keep it close.
Fine.
Florida plus 5.
So you're going to go with Florida in 5.
plus five. That's at 2:30 today. So that's our practice game to warm us up for next week.
Well, I hope that is a contrarian. You're not going to outsmart yourself, right?
No,
I mean,
not.
Sometimes you got to go with the flow. Everybody's going one way because that's the way it's going to go.
Well, Florida has a mean defense and almost everybody's back. And I think early in the season, defense comes around before offense comes around. And Michigan acclimating a lot of new players. I get the whole Jim Harbaugh thing, but I also think people are just buying in because it's Jim Harbaugh and he can do no wrong. And I think it's unfair to think that way when you have a guy bringing in so many new players.
Well, you've obviously thought about this a lot more than I have. The only counsel I have for you is to be careful, because I think smart sports people do this. They
overthink it. No, you're right.
There's a diminishing returns. It's like the more they can do what you just did, sometimes the wronger they end up being. So I'm worried about you on this.
Are you going to do this all year? You're supposed to be my support system. Not warn me about being too smart.
No. I know, because like, what am I arguing for, being dumb? No, I mean, you're very good on this, Sam.
I would love your opinion on Michigan, Florida.
I didn't even know they were playing, so that's fine.
Well, a gator would eat a Wolverine, right?
That's kind of how I operate. Well, purple's prettier than blue, so I like whatever.
Gator eating a Wolverine, you're breaking into the Vibe Score segment. Can you hold on one second?
I'm done. Florida plus five, we're moving on.
Everybody take Florida. We'll revisit that next week.
We're doing what animal would win in Vibe Score, so just hang tight.
Okay. The Vibe Score segment. Griff, should we do it now or should we come back to it after a break? We'll take our break maybe now. And then, I don't know, you're the producer
of
this
segment.
Let's do it now. Here we go. This is, I got to get my fancy music ready, Griff, and I got it here. Now my mouse isn't working. Stand by.
Well, I'm playing the song.
Yeah, but now I'm playing. Oh, that's right. Okay, Griff, hit it.
Remember this one?
Oh, wow.
Check it once, then I check it twice. Oh, ooh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just
for once
made
I know
do.
What the song is about.
Me, ooh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
Okay, so Griff, what have you got there for us?
That's Taylor Swift with Look What You Made Me Do, the first single off of her upcoming album, Reputation. It came out, you know, we're late to this one. I missed last week, though,
yep,
so
we didn't get to talk about it. So fair enough.
I just want to do a quick catch-up with a couple topics that we have here. What do you think?
Well, I think, are you asking me what I think of the song, the look, the whole new attitude?
Well, it's funny.
The new Taylor Swift?
I think it's all of a piece, right? Like, the song is like the video, which is like this image that she's projecting, at least for this song. I'm curious to hear what the rest of the album sounds like.
Okay, this is very easy for me because I feel the same way about the image, the new direction, and the song.
Okay.
Scale of 1 to 100. 100 is it's great. 0 is I don't like it. I'm giving it a 24.
Wow. That's historically low for you.
I
hated it. 85.
Domity, what's your attitude about the new Taylor Swift attitude?
10.
Oh.
Sam Panionovich in sports.
9.
Griffin is more musically inclined than at least me. Griff, what do you think?
You asked about how you feel about the whole thing. Let's say the song. I'm going to go with the song. I'll give it a 39. I don't.
It's very specific.
I was expecting more. You're being critical of my criticism? You're with the rest of us here. You hate that song, don't you?
No, I give it a 39. I don't like it. I don't like it.
On a scale of 1 to 100, not a scale of 1 to 40. A scale of 1 to 100, you're giving it a 39.
I don't like it, but I felt like the first wave of criticism might have been a little strong, and I understand why. But I think the song is actually, like, fine, whatever. It's just, it's more annoying than anything else. Like, you just are...
That's the thing for me. It's
that's
annoying.
That's the word.
Very annoying.
It is.
I do like that she's self-aware. But
say that again, Domity?
I do like that she was self-aware. Like she took head on the criticisms at the end of the video.
Yeah.
But it was just I was annoyed by that point. It was just, yeah.
Well, why is she so this is what's annoying to me. She's so temperamental. Good Lord. Imagine if she did have some faults or sins or something to really be defensive about. You're Taylor Swift. That's not enough.
Now, you're putting me in a tough spot where I feel like I should voice some defense, even though I don't really feel the same
way. Give us the other side of that.
Well, she felt attacked by...
3 years ago, Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, a year ago. by those Snapchats.
Wow.
And the song that Kanye put out. I'm like the biggest Kanye fan in the world, so this is not going to be a credible defense. But she felt like he called her to tell her what that song was going to say, but he left out a notable portion of that. I can't really say. He told her that he was going to reference her, and she was like, okay, cool. And that was what was on that phone call. But then he didn't say the second part, which to me, but I'm not her. So how could I know how it felt? So I almost see that side of it. But she misled a lot of people in acting like she didn't know anything about it. Then that phone call came out. So that's what it's all in reference to.
Was that worth
That's
blowing,
what she's mad about.
So is that worth blowing up? Because she says the old Taylor Swift is dead, she says. Now, maybe it's not. Maybe that's just artistic license for an album's sake. But would you blow up the Taylor Swift show for that?
Yeah, I mean, no. Because I like the old Taylor Swift. When she said that, I was like, oh, too bad. I'm like a big fan of her music, I have to say. I love 1989. I love Red is my favorite album of hers. I like the older ones, too. So,
you have a favorite Taylor Swift album?
Absolutely. It's Red. Fight me on it.
Fight me.
I'm not going to fight you.
People are going to say that it's 1989, but they're dead wrong.
No,
Sam,
I think
I'm
Sam's just amazed that you have one at all.
Yeah, sure.
I think that was just a shot.
That's what's always been. I think she's always had this side of her that's bothered people, or some people. But you could always say, but the songwriting is really good. And this one, I don't think that I can defend it with that. And that makes me sad.
Okay, let's do something else, Griff. What else are you asking us to score?
Well, and then in other old news that I missed, but it seemed big enough to just double back on it real quick. Game of Thrones wrapped up its 7th season. What do you think?
Season 7 was a 92. I think they paced it perfectly. A big first couple of episodes. Then they kind of took their time telling some stories, some shocking scenes, some fine violence, not much sex. And then, boom, everything in the last two episodes. A great arc.
It's great. It's very funny that you think that. For a Game of Thrones watcher who has no idea what's going on, season 7 was perfect.
That's totally me.
And that's you. Exactly. Because it's Cliff Notes. They rush through everything. And like it was broad
too
strokes.
Satisfying for you? That's,
no, it was. I enjoyed watching it, but I had some big problems. There were some stories that you could tell just got there. They don't have much time to get to the end, and they're just cramming everything in.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this show has, in the past, been more like methodical, more digging into details.
I would have the dragons in every scene, and every scene I would have them just flaming stuff. And I know that it's. That's not what it is for you aficionados, but me
loves
dragons.
I'm not even an aficionado, but it was a surprise to see. I think it was like a totally different show this season.
Okay. 1 to 100.
80. I still thought it was good. It was
still
fun.
You guys watch Game of Thrones at all?
I do not. I've never seen one episode.
I promise you this is the last time we'll talk about it for a year.
Give it a 90. Give it a 90, Sam.
I'll just go with a 90.
90.
I'm not a fan of incest, so I'll go 30.
That would actually be a huge problem for
if you can't deal with even cousins is hardly scores as incest on this show, but you got cousins, brothers, and sisters. It's amazing what they get away with on that show.
It's crazy.
All right, anything else for us here, Griff? What else we scored?
No, I think we're good.
Let's do Dancing with the Stars launches a new season. It's season number 25. The franchise, Dancing with the Stars. I'll go first. 1 to 100. It's good for America. 93.
It hasn't changed. You could have scored it like 10 years ago. Gave you your 93 then, and we're good.
And it was good then, and it's still good now. Sam, give it a 93.
93.
93.
Don't do that. Don't give him that.
Domity, score, Dances with the Stars.
83.
83. 80. Griffin, go.
I just to spite you, I want to give it like a negative 93, but I don't hate it like that. Negative 93.
So here's one that we also posted, and we're out of time, so fortunately we won't get into politics here.
No Gator Wolverine? Dang it.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Griff.
Who would win in a fight?
Between a Gator and a Wolverine?
Gator, 100.
Gators. Gator Wolverine.
Maybe like Gator versus 10 Wolverines.
I'm always rooting for mammals. I think mammals are smarter. A Wolverine is a mammal, right?
Yeah. So if people just want to check the live stream, we're going to have a couple in here, and we're going to do it.
Can I just throw the political one out there so that you know that we didn't miss the big obvious fashion story this week? The criticism of Melania was fair and spot on. You agree? Or you're rolling your eyes, give me a break. You do get to score the Trumps and the stilettos and hats. And that's part of the politics tab on the Vibe Score app. Vibe Score. Okay, thank you for that, Griffin. It's 11:52 on WGN. By the way, speaking of Wolverines versus, I believe, Gators, was that the battle we were anticipating here?
Yes.
Don's chiming in. Go ahead, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Long time no talk. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad you joined us. What's up?
I was just going to say Wolverines are fierce critters. They're like the only animal that would chase away a grizzly bear from the grizzly bear's own dinner. And it's completely true. Their Latin name is Gulo Gulo.
Are you serious about this? You've looked into this.
Fierce. Yeah, I'm totally serious about it. They're very, I grew up in a Michigan household, so I'm kind of biased towards Wolverines.
But, right. Yeah.
Clearly.
They're fascinating critters. I mean, they're, they have their own, like 5 by 5 mile territory, and if any other Wolverine gets in there, they get grumpy. And
so Wolverine versus a gator, you go with?
I think the gator would not have a chance.
Yeah.
Because, if a Wolverine submerged, perhaps, but
that would be. And if the gator gets him underwater,
those things are fierce.
Yeah.
Those things are fierce. They'll chase wolves away from their own dinner.
Hey Don, we're going to wrap it up now. Yeah. Thank you for the help on that,
you
though.
Have
but
a great one.
I'm going to go with the Wolverine. Thank you.
And this is why the Gators will take care of business, because everybody's saying the Wolverines.
11:57 now on WGN.